Welcome to Behind the Bookshelves. My name is Richard Davis, and this Abe Books podcast is dedicated to telling the stories behind books and the people who love them. Today, I'm joined by Doris Moskowitz, who is the owner of Moe's Books in Berkeley, California. Moe's is one of the best bookstores I've ever visited. It's big, but not overwhelming. Importantly, it has a long legacy. Moe was Moe Moskowitz, Doris's father. Moe was a New Yorker who opened Moe's in 1959 with his wife Barbara and started selling used paperbacks. After several incarnations around Berkeley and its famous university, Moe's ended up on Telegraph Avenue in the 1960s. This road is the epicenter of America's free speech movement and Berkeley's anti-Vietnam War demonstrations from that time. The area still has that feeling of freedom where everyone is welcome. Moe's is instantly recognizable thanks to its red and white striped awning. Step in, and there are four floors of books offering new and used copies with an antiquarian section at the top. Quite frankly, Moe's is an institution. It has remarkable longevity and a fascinating history, which Doris is going to help us understand and appreciate. Welcome, Doris.
Thank you. Hi, Richard. Thanks. It's nice to be here today.
Moe, what was he like?
Oh, well, thanks for asking. You know, he was a really big guy. You know, people say he was kind of, what they say, larger than life, but that's, you know, that's a cliche. It's kind of hard to describe. He had a lot of opinions. It was, you might think of like a performance artist, if retail could be like a performance stage. And he had extreme opinions, and he was wonderful with words. So people really enjoyed coming in and talking to him, and he seems to have read everything and have opinions about everything. So, you know, he talked, and he strutted, and he sang, and he laughed at the front counter until he died in 1997. And we all miss him because there's no one like him. But he gave us a lot of hints about how to do what we do, and we just carry on doing what he said to do. I mean, nobody is him, but we understand what he wanted us to do in terms of taking care of the store.
And in photographs, I often see him holding a large cigar.
Yeah. Yeah, he smoked cigars most of my life. He always wore a sport coat, and he had cigars in his front pocket when he wasn't smoking them. And he often worked smoking cigar, and people remember it. There was a lot of political problems in Berkeley around the anti-smoking rules that are now, you know, we now understand that it's better for everybody if people don't smoke. But, you know, he felt that it was his private property and that people didn't have to come in there. And if he wanted to smoke a cigar, he should be able to do that. And he thought people in Berkeley were too righteous and opinionated. And so there's a lot in the press and articles in the paper about him and his cigar. Yeah.
So if Moe was such a big character, how did your mum fit in, especially at the beginning of the bookstore?
Well, you know, she was really more of an intellectual. She was like a very stable person, very clear. She supported his ideas about having a bookstore. And for years and years, long after they separated, she was his silent partner. And so she took care of everything in terms of like building the building that Moe's is in. It was built brand new in 1978. And, you know, she got the architect and she designed the thing. And I'm really glad that you asked me because I am personally like her biggest fan. She's kind of the hidden secret at Moe's. The store would not exist without her. She bankrolled him. She had her father invented the first electric heater. And so she had a little money and she invested in Moe. And, you know, it takes people to believe in you to do anything really spectacular. When I wrote a book about Moe called Radical Bookselling, and it really allowed me to tell her story, which is often overlooked in the way that many women's lives are overlooked by, you know, larger-than-life men. But she really believed that he was smart, you know, like a fox, she'd say. And he was so funny and entertaining. She really did kind of adore him. And so because he was loud and kind of difficult, I think she preferred to let him just run the store. And so she didn't really work in the store. She worked behind the scenes.
Right. Now, you've run the store yourself since 1997 when your father passed away.
Yeah.
Did you ever think of doing anything else?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I mean, at the time when he died, my son was just born. So my son was 4 months old. And I have to tell you, I had just convinced Mo that I should be allowed to stay home. Because I had already been working in the store for years and years at that point. But I was, you know, having a baby, and that's a big job. And I really liked being with him. And so I had convinced my dad that I should be able to stay home and take care of the baby. And he had just said yes. And then he died. And so I had to leave our son just a few hours at a time at first with my husband. So it worked out all right, but I wanted to do that. And then, because I've always loved the store, I always wanted to work there, but I actually would rather be like a torch singer. I like songs of the 1930s, and I play piano and I sing around town a bit. And no one is clamoring at my door to hear Am I Blue, but I'm told that I'm kind of a class act, you know, but it's not like a career that I could really pick up. So that kind of put me in a position after college of having a degree in English and music, but not really having any viable skills and needing a job. So I started working at Moe's in 1990. And so I'd been there 7 years at the point when Moe died. And I just worked as part of the staff. And it's a really fun place to work. It's really challenging. It's really exciting. And I had always wanted to work there.
What was your first job in the store?
Well, you know, for years, he agreed to hire me, but he didn't really believe in nepotism. So he wasn't going to give me any authority over anybody. My sister and my half-sister had both worked there, and it was clear that it was easy to get fired, and I didn't want to get fired. So I tried not to do the things that they had done. So it did turn out over the period of 7 years, I was fired twice. And then he apologized and he brought me back. But most of the time I worked as a peon on the staff, like I was somebody else's assistant, as I was being trained to buy and shelf used books. So I had to be trained, and I was actually probably the first person at Moe's to be trained, because typically people come to work there from other experiences and other stores and other, you know, they either know books or they don't. And so I think I was an experiment, like could a person be trained to be a book buyer, which is the best job at Moe's. And I tried to do that. I love that. But then he died after doing that for a while, and my job has changed. But I do some of that.
So I'm wondering, in the 60s, whether it was actually an organized bookstore, if it was sort of laissez-faire in how it was laid out and how it went about its business.
Well, it's always been really chaotic. It's kind of hard to describe. It's kind of hard to figure out if it really is a business at all, because he really believed in freedom, so that the staff has a lot of freedom and autonomy. And he really respected other people's opinions about what a good book is and what a good bookstore would be. And it was fun for him if people had freedom. He wasn't interested in setting down a whole lot of rules about how people should be. But it's tricky because as a business person, you're letting people spend your money. You know, you're buying books over the counter. You're trusting them to represent you. But he determined early on that he didn't want to distrust people. So he tried to hire people, and then you got to stay. No one was fired. People just, you know, and weirdly, it kind of worked out. People had a lot of freedom, and they liked the job, and a lot of them stayed a long time. In fact, the man who runs our rare bookshop, John Long, we call it Mormo's, and it's on our fourth floor, he's been with us since 1976. So that's a long time. So people stay, and I think it's because they have the freedom to make up their own job.
Right. So you were born.
So in the six.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Doris. So you were born in 1965, I believe.
Yes, 66.
66.
Yeah.
If you were to go back in time to the 60s, during all that, the demonstrations and the unrest around that area, is there something that you would have liked to have seen or just been a fly on the wall during that time?
It's such a good question, Richard. This is such an interesting question. Since you sent me these questions, I've been thinking about that. I think in my heart, I really miss the hippies. I was really just born too late to really see honest hippies. And I would love to see the optimism and the warmth and like the dream that people had of making the world as it should be and not just accept it as it has been. You know, I mean, I love the idea of like new beginnings and hugging trees, this kind of thing. And, you know, I grew up in Berkeley and I went to a pretty far out school, you know, where I didn't brush my hair and I didn't wear my shoes and I wasn't graded. So I do think that I've had a lot of exposure to that philosophy in my life. And again, this freedom that Mo talked about at Mo's is a part of that. But the people old enough to be, like, my older brother's age, you know, he was 18 in 1969 in Berkeley. Like, a lot of the really, really great people, they left. And Berkeley's kind of cynical, you know? It's just, a lot of the positivity was drained out of most people. Maybe because everything didn't change from the communes and all that. But I kind of miss that. You know, and there's a lot of wonderful people who are still here looking to kind of be here now in that 60s idea. But a lot of really cool people left, and I miss them. And I wish that they'd come back, you know. So I was three in 1969, and I don't know if I missed it at all. I was in preschool. I probably had a better time in the 60s than a lot of people did. but I missed Telegraph. You know, I missed whatever that was.
Yeah.
So the love and the spirit and the be here now and the flower children, that kind of thing.
But the bookstore remained and is still there today. So
mm-hmm, yeah.
If Berkeley's changed, what does Mo's stand for today?
Yeah, this is another interesting thing. I mean, what Mo's stood for then, it's sort of similar to what it stands for now. I mean, because Mo was an older generation. He was born in the 20s in New York City. You know, he was more like a father to that generation of hippies, or whatever you want to call people of that time. And he didn't have a lot of patience for their dreams and happiness and positivity. I mean, he was a really cynical New York guy. So, you know, Mo's is prepared to have books about serious topics, you know, for people who are thrifty about money, who have, you know, discerning tastes, and we're still about that kind of thing. Learning, independence, diversity, hard work. And one really important thing is that we're very adaptable, but we're still very, I said, discerning about what books we think are good books. So it's, although the story is massive, it's very much a cold experience. You know, it's curated in terms of what we think of as good books. And I think that was true then, too. Because there were always things that he didn't want to have in there, that he didn't think were good. And maybe it was based on what would sell or not sell, but he figured it out, and they figured it out. And it's a team effort, and that's still true. So maybe it's about that, teamwork.
I remember your art section was exceptional.
We're really proud of it, yeah. We buy from museums and libraries. We just bought the contents of a local antiquarian shop that was going out of business, and we brought in all their books. Just the stock keeps changing. We do have a lot of wonderful art books, it's true. I'm very proud of that.
So you're just four blocks away from the University of California, Berkeley. Does the university and its students and its faculty still influence the books you stock?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're an enormous scholarly bookshop. And it is one of the most celebrated public universities in the country. And we do rely on graduate students and professors. But undergraduates are still kind of confused about us. Like, no, often we're just, the size of the store really confuses people. Like, they don't know what to make of us, you know. And so we have to often explain the store. Like, maybe we should give tours to freshmen, because we're not a textbook store, you know. And if you're not a textbook store and you're not a Barnes & Noble, then what are you? You know, to a person who's never been in a store like Mo's. Because there's only three stores like it in the country that are this size, and most people have never experienced it. So
I presume you mean Powell's, Strand, and someone else.
Those are the two.
Those are the two, Powell, right? Yeah. Strand. And yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a I little, mean, they're both of those. Look, those are bigger than us.
Yeah, it's a little alarming that the millennial generation have not experienced many of those big independent bookstores.
Right, it is. And I was feeling concerned about that, but this year we've seen a lot of very enthusiastic young people, you know, in their 20s, who just love to read and just want to be in a place where they can have a thought and follow that thought along to another book, you know. I mean, I think it changes. And books have never really been part of mainstream culture anyway. You know, they've always been on the margins. Not everybody was interested in it, so maybe they'll come back.
I think they are.
So
interestingly,
when
one of those new customers, someone who hasn't been to the store, when they walk through the door, do you watch them? Do you see their reaction?
Yeah, it's funny. I've been talking to my staff about this question to see what they think, because my experience is unique to me, because I've been there, this is my 29th year there, and I'm one of a group of people who were there when Mo was there, because we have a lot of young people, and I wanted to hear what people who are new, what they say. But we all kind of agree that mostly it's delight or like amazement or shock. Then they seem sort of, when they're leaving, they're always saying that they're so happy, that they're really glad to see us and the books. They love the enormous piles of books we have at the counter. And often their first response is just, how could a store have that many floors? Like, they can't imagine the size. Like, they almost don't know what to make of us, you know? And the biggest group that talked to me are visitors that were here in the 60s, and then they saw their local bookstores close. And they're just so happy to see us thriving, you know, buying and selling books, and mostly looking as we looked all those years ago. So the books are still here, and sometimes they're sad about Mo being gone, but he would be really old by now. I mean, he was born in 1921. And he was at work on the day he died. You know, I think that's the best way to go, you know, not to really have to get too old. So people say, oh, they like to reminisce about Mo and some funny thing he did, or his cigar or something. And he could be sort of gruff, and mostly we're nicer now, you know, still occasionally sarcastic, but that's kind of to be expected. But we're mostly welcoming and nice, and we just smile. So mostly happy and shocked, I'd say.
So what is the secret of the store's longevity?
Well, I think it's back to this question of adaptability. We're a very creative group and very adaptable. And partly that has to do with the fact that we sell used books. But it also is because the philosophy of individual autonomy, you know, that each person, they get to spend the store's money to buy books, which is how we bring in our stock. They're trusted. There's a freedom to that, which is important, and it's not like the store is really managed. So I would say that plays a big part of it. I think the fact that we sell used books and that we buy this variety of titles over the counter every day, it gives many of us an opportunity to try things out and then see how it goes. And we can buy like a collection of books and then price them and put them out there, but then we can change the price or move the section or anything we like. And our stock is constantly changing. So people that have figured that out come by often to see what's new. And to some, it's exciting that titles and prices change over time. So I think it's a part of the used book world that you have to be adaptable, because you don't know what you're going to get. But I think that is a fair explanation for why Mo's survives, is that we've been adaptable about how the streets changed. We've been in a number of different locations. We've handled retiring of staff people that we thought would never retire, even Mo dying. I mean, I didn't know that we could survive without Mo, you know, and it's been 22 years and here we are. I didn't know that. But, you know, we just keep trying to find a way through, and here we are.
And the future, so where do you think Mo's books will be in 20 years' time?
Yeah, that's really hard to say. You know, I mean, where are books going to be? in 20 years' time, you know? I mean, won't it be wonderful in the future if for the people in the future, if they have a place to go to, like, unplug their phones and to read used books and not have to spend a lot of money, you know, to sit with their own thoughts and minds and maybe learn, like, an ancient language or read around other people and enjoy being in Berkeley? You know, wouldn't it be great for them if we're still here, you know? I mean, I hope so, and I know that for me, that I'm, you know, 100% committed to doing everything that I can do. But, you know, the world is full of complex things, that things change. I don't know. I hope so. I hope so.
I'm sure. I have a feeling Mose will still be around in 20 years.
Well, my son, who is Mose's only grandson, his name's Elijah, and he's in school, in college. He's 22 years old now. And, you know, don't I have to do everything I can do to make it possible for him to read the novels that he wants to read and study the architecture that he cares about? I mean, people that age need a bookstore too, you know?
Yeah, no, so. I still see that passion in young people. Indeed.
Yeah.
Okay, so talking of books, we always ask our guests what book or books they are reading. So perhaps you can tell us what you're reading at the moment, Doris.
Well, I just finished Flights, the Olga Tokarczuk novel, which is fantastic. And I've started reading The Earth Abides with my husband to read it out loud together. But I'm also reading Overstory, Richard Powers' novel. I haven't finished it, so don't tell me the end. But it's making me think about trees, and it's giving me so much comfort. I guess I am a tree hugger, after all. But yeah, I'm reading that. And I just picked up Questlove's book on creativity, which is really great, too. So I try not to bring home too many books, you know? But I like to finish what I read, so I usually do. And somebody actually asked me to be in their book group. I was so flattered. I don't know why people didn't ask me. I was in one in college, and then for years, I just love talking to people about books. It's so fun. So,
perhaps people feel a little intimidated when someone who runs a very large bookstore is in their book club. They might think you might be a know-it-all or something.
Well, I do have a lot of opinions. I mean, I think most people do, but I do have a lot of opinions, but I can relate to that. I mean, I really thought that Mo had read all of the books in the store. I thought we were walking around in his brain, you know, when I was a kid. And it is really intimidating. But he didn't read all those books. He read a lot of politics when he was young. He read the news, you know what I mean? But he didn't sit down with a novel like I do, or science or politics or philosophy like my mom. He just wasn't the avid reader that I thought he was. But, you know, there's room for all kinds. Everybody doesn't have to read the same way. I mean, there's picture books where there's no words at all, and that's reading.
Yeah.
Just looking at the art books, you know, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Do you ever find yourself picking up maybe an obscure out-of-print book that came in on the used books counter and simply because it catches your eye?
I do. I have a soft spot for older children's books. Like old board books, things like that. No words, but just pictures that somehow survived from that time. Yeah, things like that. Yeah, I love it. I love the old books. I really do.
Excellent.
So I try not, and I love the being in our rare book room, but again, I try not to have a first edition of something because you just go broke, you know?
Yeah, we know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm interested in ABE. How is it all going?
We're well. We watch people like you and some of the bigger stores and see how they do. And we do uh-huh. try and visit them. It's always interesting to see them in the flesh, right? You see their books they have online, but that doesn't really tell the story of what a physical location can be. So, like, wow. your environment, I think, with your store is really important, that it is next to a big university. It is surrounded mm-hmm. by lots of alternative businesses. And mm-hmm. I think that's part of the picture, the big picture for a big used bookstore like you.
Yeah, that is. I mean, but also, if you were looking at just our books that are online, you would see our rare books, and you would see our the books that are at our warehouse in West Oakland, but you wouldn't see the majority of our store. Because, like, our philosophy section, which is massive, is not cataloged. And our literature section's not. I mean, most of the store is not. The general stock, whenever we've tried to figure out a way to do that, we felt that we weren't going to be able to maintain it as a stable catalog because people move the books around. So unlike a store like Powell's or The Strand that keeps a list of everything, we actually don't know what we have. So you actually need to come in and see what we have. Or you can call and we'll go and we'll look. But we have to actually look. We actually use the alphabet. You know, we walk to the shelf and we look. So even though it's massive, we can't the internet can't even capture it. So I think you might not, a person who didn't come to Moe's might think we were a much smaller store than we are.
So how many books do you actually, or volumes, do you actually have in the store?
I'm guessing like 200,000 titles.
And then how many more in the warehouse?
Well, in our rare book room, we probably have probably under 10,000. You know, it changes. It depends. Because we the stock changes. Those are cataloged, and they're on MoesBooks.com. And those are the ones where we were on ADE for the longest time. We've been on there a long time cataloging those because, you know, it's hard for people to get there, and they're expensive books. The warehouse, I think the number is around 25,000.
Right.
I'm not sure. And those are the like maybe more pedestrian books, like more, you know, your average book that for some reason we had too many copies or they're not going to sell well because it's a history of Montana or something like that and it's Berkeley.
Yeah.
Where there's that somebody will pay more online. But we're always trying to prioritize our store where you can come in and the really unusual things are still there. We wouldn't want it to just be the cheaper thing. You know what I mean? We want it to be the good thing. So we're trying to balance the catalogs with the living store.
So really it's a balance between, you don't really want a book that's going to sit around for 10 years.
No, we change books. I mean, often some sections it's a year at most before we mark things down. We try to change the stock all the time. We're constantly culling and moving. We can't have things sitting still. We buy too many books and we're moving them along too fast. So our prices are to sell them now, you know, not later.
And do you see trends or certain genres or types of book that become more popular over time or become less popular? You talked about philosophy a second ago. Probably
yeah.
Most bookstores will have a thin philosophy section, but I imagine yours is quite robust.
It is, and we're really proud of it. I mean, we get really excited when somebody, you know, like a professor for some reason, let's say that they're retiring and we can buy the books from their office. You know, they're a rhetoric professor at the university or something like that. You know, and there's a lot of people who've been studying one thing for a long time around here, so that's wonderful. And having a lot of philosophy makes us all really happy, along with classics. You know, things about Latin, you know, things in Latin or Greek or of that era. That's probably specific to Berkeley and Moe's than it is other stores, right?
Right. But would you still get someone coming in and asking for a John Grisham?
Yes, we will. We do. We have mysteries, new and used. I mean, we're a general bookstore, so we have everything. But we don't sell romances. Sometimes people will think that that's, you know, why wouldn't you have romances? You know, because they don't sell for us. I mean, a lot of the time, it depends what sells. One thing I've noticed recently, there's a lot of people interested in graphic novels. And there are a couple of comic book stores in Berkeley that specialize in those things. And they sell comic books and graphic novels. And there's some for kids. And it's hard for us to figure out how much we want to go into that because the used ones kind of flood the market. So we have more used ones than we do new. You know, you have to have the newest one. But, you know, so anyway, people ask for them, but then they don't buy them. So you have to be very practical how you're going to spend your money, you know. You have to be very practical.
Okay. Yeah, I can imagine it's a very interesting but not always an easy job.
No, it's not. But I love books, and I really do like to kind of organize things. So I think in some way I'm suited. I have an affinity for the books, and I'm very hardworking. So it's pretty fun for me, personally. And I really love the staff, and I like being around, you know, book people. We listen to a lot of music very loud at the front counter, and we all kind of, you know, we like each other. We just had a big party. The store turned 60. So we had a big party, and we had cake and music, and the community was really excited and happy and proud, and, you know, it was fairly fun.
Excellent. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah.
All right, Doris, I think that's all we have time for this week.
All right.
I want to say a big thank you to Doris Moskowitz for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking me, Richard. It's been really fun.
Thank you for being with us. And I urge everyone to visit Mo's books on Telegraph Avenue in the heart of Berkeley. If you are ever in that part of the world, visit Mo's. You will not be disappointed.
Thank you.
And if you want to go online, you can learn more about Mo's at moesbooks.com, moesbooks.com. And thank you for listening. Thank you, Doris, and we'll see you next time.